So I had something happen to me a couple of days ago that was briefly incredibly frightening and bewildering. Briefly. I was at Target.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, there's one...
Dude, you worked there, motherfucker.
I know. But I mean, not recently. I was in college.
Well, I was hungover, and I was coming out of Target carrying a bag, and there was a very attractive woman passing by, and my head was turned, and, you know, I'm not... It doesn't make me proud to say this, but I was, you know...
It's involuntary. I mean...
Probably.
You were aware that she was pretty.
It wasn't your fault.
Yeah, I was making a concerted effort to observe her prettiness for a little while longer. And while I was doing that, in the back of my head, I didn't realize that there was a tree full... Well, because you hear this all the time, there's a tree full of grackle going nuts, and then all of a sudden...
You hear this all the time.
Well, if you go downtown, like at dusk, I mean, there's a lot of grackles in trees. Like they're like, you don't notice this. You hear it all the time.
It's the old tree full of grackle story, Ryan. Come on.
Yeah, I'm trying.
You
to
hear
keep
it
up.
All. It, okay, you, now you're gonna notice
tell
this
it,
next
tell
time
us,
you're
tell
on
tell us
this.
The rest of the story.
So I'm walking. This is in the middle of the day. I'm not paying attention to the birds because, you know, why would I? And then all of a sudden, the bird is landed on my head, attacking me, and there's another one flying along, and I'm like. You know, immediately, of course, I'm convinced that somehow...
You're in a Hitchcock film?
Was this like
well,
this
yeah,
woman?
It's my yeah. own personal birds, but also I'm being punished for, you know, by
yeah.
God for...
For looking at
this
lady
woman.
Too long? Yeah.
And then another bird flies around me, and one is female, one is male, and then they both
How
land.
Do you know?
Because the males look like crows, and the females are smaller and brown.
Oh, okay. I thought he was going to say that they started doing it in front of him.
Like, well, one was in a dress. And
yeah, like, da-na.
He's checking out grackle cuck.
So, yes, that's true. That's usually what I do in the parking lot of Target. So so the one lands on the ground, and then the other one lands on the ground, too, and then they walk about 3 feet in front of me, side by side, but also they're about 3 feet apart, staring back at me, casting glances at me, and going, meh, meh, meh. Like, and I'm like, what the fuck did I do to piss these birds off? And they did it the whole way until I got
second.
To my car.
Were you wearing your Game of Thrones t-shirt?
I may have been. Because it was the day after we recorded last week. That's why I was hungover, and I probably was wearing that shirt.
Yeah, there you go.
So back during the day in West Texas, there was the golf course where if you took golf as a – you could take golf as a class, like as a –
That sounds amazing.
At Old Texas Tech.
Yep. And one of the things that they –
Was the whole course brown?
No. One of the things that they taught you at the – they have water. Jesus. one of the things that they taught you at this particular course was that that there were birds that would get a little fussy if you got too close and, like, whatever. If you're out there playing golf, like, sometimes you hit the ball near the trees. But it was bad enough that they told you to, like, take your putter – out of the bag, and as you walk, to hold it up over your head, and that way, if the birds were dive bombing you, they would hit the top, whatever the like closest thing to the. They weren't smart. They
and
were just
angry. Hit the golf club.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, yeah. You don't know, like, if you had no context, and you just saw like a bunch of people, like a foursome of guys playing golf, holding their putters up like they'd won something for 150 yards, like. You might wonder, but that was why.
No wonder they get pissed off every so often.
Well, no, it's because you ogle women.
Yes.
No, I'm telling you, I really, for a brief moment, I was bewildered and thought that it was some sort of supernatural punishment. We've talked enough.
Of course it was.
Right. Well, of course, you know, it didn't take long before I came back, you know, and thought that through.
Hey, can I say something? I guess
sure.
I am.
Yes.
I'm excited about this week. This week's gonna be. This is a new twist on this show.
It's producer Mark taking over the show.
Hijacks the show.
Hijacks the show. Pardon.
Yeah, like, you know, and we have a new mixing board. We've got all kinds of shit going sideways today.
You guys can't hear it, but we've got reverb.
Oh, yeah. Shit. You fuck. Finally.
And I asked for tremolo, and and I want more bass. Can you give me a little more bass in the monitor?
Some vibrato.
In vocoder.
It's all about the bass, Kevin.
Can I get auto-tune?
Can I have some synesthesia?
Well, let's.
You're looking really seven right now.
This room tastes like purple.
Let's do a. Thank you. Let's do a show. It's gonna be like this all day today.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do a show. So I don't know. For now, I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin. So Shane, I almost called you this weekend from your hometown as I was rolling through Ingram, Texas. And let me say, you know, the funny thing was, so with that, we won't sidebar on this for very long, but every other year, Ryan's family and my family, which happen to be the same family, do a thing where they get together in what I've been referring to as Metropolitan Kerrville, Texas.
Hunt is Metropolitan Kerrville.
It is. But and it's really pretty there, and they didn't get hit by a lot of the heavy rain that hit the Austin area. And so anyway, it was nice to get
Johnny
out there.
Manziel for that, really.
Well, sure. But anyway, we got out there for a couple of days, and what I could think, we had relatives come in from all over the country, and what I thought of, there was a guy on horseback walking down the main street in Ingram, Texas, and I thought, people from out of state think that this happened all the time. Like,
it's true.
I mean, and does it? You're from there. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I remember usually when you see that happen, and granted, it's been a long time since I've lived there, but in my recollection, I would see that, and usually when I did, the man was pulled over by a cop. I've seen it several times. The man was pulled over by a cop and was intoxicated. Same thing with driving a tractor.
He just got on his horse when he was hammered.
Just got on the horse and rode through the street.
Yeah.
Or a man driving a riding mower. You'd see that. You'd see a cop.
Like the, did you know that our dad Scott actually Stapp went to jail for stealing a horse?
Yeah. I did know that. He has since turned it around.
He has cleaned his act up. But yeah, he and his buddy, when they were in high school, thought it would be funny.
Liberated a horse.
They liberated a horse. I think it was from like the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo like parade that they do right before they go to.
It was probably funny at first, and then subsequently less funny.
Unfunny.
Yeah.
I think his dad like let him rot overnight.
Was that under the umbrella of animal cruelty or?
Probably under the umbrella of the 50s.
I think it was juvenile hijinks.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Juvenile drunken hijinks.
Okay.
Anyway,
which makes more sense.
It just made me think of. Well, bad cell service, and the fact that you were from there, and I got a kick out of seeing that horse walk down the main street, not because it's the most novel thing that you've ever seen if you live in Texas, but because people who are not from here think that it's probably more of a stereotypical thing that happens here than it is.
Well, I have to say it is pretty novel. Yeah. Even if you live in that area, it's pretty damn novel.
Yeah.
So
anyway, sorry, it was a weird sidebar, and it occurred to me that I didn't talk in the first segment about the fact that we spent a little bit of time in your hometown. I listened for anybody that sounded like your friend Rudy. I didn't hear anybody.
No, he's long gone. We don't
Steets.
Hey, yeah. My little Eats.
Yeah. but let's circle back to what this show is about, because I'm really excited about what tonight is. And outside of the main event here, I don't know what's in store for us. So producer Mark has hijacked the show.
I have hijacked the show, yes. And
the quietest very, hijacking ever.
Very
pardon me.
It's sort of like a...
Might I go ahead and...
I'm wearing a burqa.
It's very professorial hijacking. Yeah. Excuse me, everyone. I'm going to commence with the hijacking.
Well, and guys, you know, I was a little bit nervous. I had a hard time picking the album for this week because, you know, I wanted to make sure that we had a fine balance of hijack versus good quality content.
Hijinks,
yes. I'm very, very excited and anxious to hear what you guys have to say about this week's album, which is The Who, Sell Out. And we have a couple of nice little surprises in store for us as well for a few minutes with and A Current Affair this week.
Okay.
Well, I'm... Yeah.
Where to begin?
Well, who wants to take this? I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say about...
Well, I'll start. I listened to it a couple times through before looking up anything about it. And I'll say this first. I don't really get The Who.
You and I are alike in that regard.
Well, I've known people, like one in particular, who like love The Who.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's, and they're in the conversation. Like, I feel like you've got the first tier of British invasion bands, which are, you know, Beatles, Rolling Stones, and then you've got like The Who and The Kinks. And The Who generally gets placed a little bit higher than The Kinks, and I think it should be inverted. But that said, there are several Who songs I like. They're just generally not on this record. After I had listened to it a couple times, I went back and read about it, and I was like, dude, that sounds awesome. But I'd already listened to it, and I was like, it's not awesome.
Okay. I'm gonna jump in here real quick, only because, like, you guys don't like The Who. I don't like The Who even more than you guys, probably. I've gone on record many, many times. I've gotten in late-night drunken discussions about how much I can't stand Keith Moon's drumming and been taken to task for that.
It's like slightly off the beat, like on purpose.
It's just too bombastic for me. However, having said that, what did I write down? I found most of this record to be thoroughly enjoyable. Other than the novelty concept aspect of it, broke it up and made it into a way that was hard to digest it. It, like all the stuff that the Who stuff that they do, like the overwrought harmonies with the drums and the really like strong, loud upfront bass. They have all that stuff, but in this, like it gets a little more interesting. And almost like the first, like Arminia, City in the Sky, and Marianne with the Shaky Hand, love them. But there's the Heinz baked bean thing in the middle there that just breaks up. It's hard to hear the song, any continuity in the record in between the songs. You just want to, like, I can't imagine. Like, for me, it's really easy. I can just go and click to the next track, but I can't imagine. Like, if you have this record, you know, in 1967, and you're like, you listen to it, because let's face it, after one listen, maybe two listens, it's so novel. It's like Monty Python got a hold of these songs, and
no, it's very Monty Python. It's very British. It's very like cheeky.
Yeah, but and regardless of how entertaining or well written the jingles are, after the second or third time you hear them, you never want to hear them again. I'm assuming if you're a fan of this band, and you can't skip over them because you have a fucking LP, you don't have Spotify.
So each in celebration of this record, each one of my comments tonight will be brought to you by a sponsor.
thank you.
This first thought is brought to you by the Austin six string saison that I'm taking a sip of right now, which actually is pretty good.
Yeah.
So buy it at a store
Austin
near
brewery
you.
Brewery now.
This is South Austin Brewery.
Yeah, yeah. South Austin Brewery. Anyway, beyond that, yeah, here's the thing. Like, I generally speaking don't get The Who. Like, I mean, I went through. Here's what I'll say. I will say this. I went through a very, very, very brief Who phase, like everybody goes through a Bob Marley phase. Like, I had, like...
Dude, you had a reggae show in college, didn't you?
I did have a reggae show on... Well, I mean, let's not go down that rabbit hole, but I did have a reggae show for a time my freshman year of college on college radio, but which is different than being a huge reggae fan. Like, that was the shift that they had available. Anyway, where this is concerned, like... I had a copy of The Who's Greatest Hits, and like I kind of saw like at its peak what people found really interesting about this band, but all of what I found mostly about listening to this record outside of the concept thing, which I think is a whole separate conversation and is entirely wrapped in.
It's an important
when
conversation.
It came. It's an important conversation, but it's like, but it's very, you know, we talk about, we use as kind of as a semi-derivative term. That a record is of its time. This is like, there's no more blatant way to say that a record is of its time than it's a 1967 concept record. Like,
well, I mean, like, that's true, but I mean, but having, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Having said that, I mean, the album really, I mean, it's really of this time too. If you think about what a lot of the message is,
I like the concept more than I like the music.
Right, I get that. I I like the concept more than I like the concept of the jingles more than I like. I actually love about half the songs on this record. Right. The other half for me just do the whole Who thing that just makes me roll my eyes and get annoyed.
I think
for
you and I are more similar in that regard than you think.
There's it's funny because I'm just going to go off on just a tiny tangent here, but the very first song on the record, when I was listening, I actually listened to it a couple of times in a row. I was cleaning my house, and I was like, this is the best Who song I've ever heard. Turns out Pete Townsend didn't write it.
None of the Who wrote it.
Roger Daltrey was involved in it, right?
Was he?
On the credits, No, you're right. Yeah, no. He sang it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's an amazing song. I mean, there's other great songs on this, but I just thought it was funny for me.
Right.
I think that The Who is one of those bands, in my general experience, that the same thing that we're talking about right now about the concept. Like, the idea, the concept of... Oh, well, let me go back for just a second. Sorry. Commercialism, like addressing commercialism. Music is in a place where it is, like these days, you kind of sink or swim based on how many placement or how much licensing you can get.
Well, now, yeah, that's a real thing.
That's what I'm saying. He's saying about the concept album, it's of its time, but I think that, but it also really applies in a lot of ways. I mean,
well, you almost can't sell out now because, like, selling out is making a living. Well,
right, but
if you don't sell out, you don't make a living in music.
But it's cheeky in the way that it does it. I'm saying it's not like Bruce Springsteen in 1983 saying, I'll never do a Visa commercial. It's in this, like, cheeky, like, sort of, like, you know, winking
thing. Well, and
what's
funny to me, and maybe we'll touch on this later, is that they basically went in and appropriated some of these commercials.
Well, I think they were already
from
doing
Pirate
commercials,
Radio.
From what I read.
They were doing commercials, yes, but they also took some of this stuff from
It's a little
Pirate
bit
Radio.
Of a Paul's Boutique thing.
They actually ended up in lawsuits over some of this stuff.
I thought that they had them all written for this record.
No, they actually took some of these were actual jingles that
they
took.
Well, that makes it even cooler.
And then they also tried to get sponsorship from some of these companies that they, like Heinz Baked Beans, and they were like, no way.
Well, right. And, you know, I mean... if you think about it, like to Ryan's point about like selling out is making a living, it is in modern day, but it's broken down around genre lines. Like you can't do it like certain, like nobody asks questions if you're, you know,
well,
if you're,
I mean,
if
like,
you're in a
like
certain genre
or whatever, like it, yeah. There's never been a problem with that.
Right.
But in the last 10 years, like Spoon can land an Apple commercial and it's. It exposes them to a whole new audience.
Because that's how you live. That's how you subsist as a musician. You know, these people, I love, like, I read something recently. Jeff.
Foxworthy?
No, different Jeff. Okay, well, let's go there.
Sorry. Hey, man, if your house has more than one dog under it.
Can we just, like, let's go to break and we'll put a backdrop up for you and you can just do your stand-up.
I'm sorry, Shane.
We've already got the backdrop up.
No, the guy, the main songwriter in Portishead was talking about how recently, and I'll look this figure up when we go and do a break and listen to a song in a minute, that Portishead had millions of downloads and they ended up getting, like, less than $1,000. And it's a.
Are you talking about the Spotify thing, or
right?
I'm talking about
streaming. That's what I'm saying about why it's an interesting. Like I'm saying,
the Taylor Swift conundrum.
We've talked about that before. Yeah. Well, Taylor.
Well, she's decided to abstain from Spotify, and
right. I know.
Coffers are the better for it, but it's a gamble.
It's a much larger discussion. But my point for this, pertaining to this particular thing right now, is that what you were saying, it's difficult to make money as a musician in this day and age unless licensing is involved in some degree, other than merchandise or playing shows. But if you're a small band starting out and you get a...
You want to get in commercials.
Right,
at this point.
Whereas 20 years ago, it was anathema.
Oh, you were a giant sellout.
Right, but now you can't make money. It's the easiest way and the easiest form of recognition. The culture is so segmented.
Well, some of the stigma's gone. And so
it has to be.
Yeah. Well, the model's changed. And so if you don't, you know, I mean, like, stands to reason that, like, if that's the way that people are sold music nowadays, you can't say, well, you can't whatever. There are certain things that you can't do, and that's the prevalent way.
Well, I feel like the audience has accepted that. Okay, well, we're going to be streaming your shit for basically free. We're not going to like give you shit for, allowing it to be licensed and, you know, using commercials for whatever the hell.
But sure. Also, the world has completely changed. I don't know if you guys saw this. I don't know if you watched Portlandia, but there was a sketch, I think, in their second season where this guy is like a punk rocker, and he gets in a coma in 1980. You know, he's railing against the man, and then he comes out of the coma, you know, in 2011 or 2012, and he's like, everybody's the man now. You know, people are all on Facebook, on their phones. It is so much more of a consumer society now. It's not – people don't bat their eyes at it anymore because you're constantly bombarded with, through the internet or whatever data plan you use, like –
Can I interrupt?
Please.
There was a Chuck Klosterman piece on this at some point, an essay, where basically I don't remember the whole essay and it's not important, but there was a kernel of it that I think is really pertinent here, and he was like, there was a magic to not immediately having all of the answers at your fingertips. So
totally agree. Which is interesting. Cannot agree more.
Like,
that's actually been on my mind a lot lately. But that's off the track, Mark.
Mark, you're gonna pick us a song.
Why don't you pick a song?
You know, so you picked up on the opening track on this album that was not written by The Who. It was written by John Speedy Keen, and the only original song to ever appear on a Who album, actually, that was not written by the band. So why don't we start off there? Because I think it's a good way to start into this album. So this is called Armenia City in the Sky.
If you're a traveler and you can't relax, close your eyes, think on this. If the rumors floating in your head are turned to facts, close your eyes and think on this.
As you know, I occasionally will reference some source material on these tracks, and one outlet that I find myself occasionally drawn to is Sputnik Music, and with these records that have been out for 40 or 50 years, it's actually often really interesting to read these, because sometimes they're modern takes and sometimes they're less modern takes. And anyway, this guy does a song-by-song breakdown, and they're usually like kind of just half-assed, and so I just wanted to share.
Half-assed or full-assed?
It's about three-quarter ass. So
that's useful.
Oh,
that's
sure.
A useful, yeah, descriptive phrase.
More useful than not. Anyway, Armony in the Sky. This song starts with some weird noises / voice that say all the days of the week, and it gives the sound of a radio section. When the actual song kicks in, it is a great opener. There are studio effects which give it a somewhat of a psychedelic feel, and Daltrey's voice is very odd for him. Anyway, it's a great song and one of the better ones on the album, 4.8 out of 5.
Anyway. When was this written? This is a recent...
I think it's semi-recent.
Is
I don't know if it was...
the same place that you found all of those reviews by Liz Fraser?
2005. So it's like
the Cocteau Twins. Remember when you found
Yeah. No, this is not people write into the paper and they just print the ones that they think are funny.
Because it sounds like it.
It does. It totally does.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get on with the rest of the record.
Well, actually, what did the word that stuck out to me there was psychedelic. Because it's like, despite this being like kind of this cheeky concept, you know, sort of ironic album, it does sound very much of its time and like psychedelic and hippie. Like, and hippies don't sell out, you know.
So not all of it. Some of it sounds hippie. I mean, there's definitely hippie tracks on it, but I mean,
I don't know. It just sounds real dated to me. Like that song's all right, but
I don't understand what, like when you say dated, like it's just something that you do. It's of a time that's not like I just
okay,
don't, I don't
okay,
understand.
I can listen.
No.
I can listen to Pet Sounds or Sergeant Pepper today, and it sounds fresh. This does
it sounds
not.
Dated as shit to me. It's just songs that you like from that era. Like I don't
Fair
like
enough.
I don't like most of these from that era. But like the word dated, like if you call something dated, I mean that just that doesn't even hold.
I get that it's denigrating.
Yeah, it's a negative connotation.
Well, no. Right? And, like you were saying this, I was thinking about this the other day because I was listening to a little Sinatra, and when we talked
dated,
about
dated, totally dated.
Completely
dated Sinatra.
No, you said it sounds like a relic. It sounds like it's of another time. That's
it does.
I'm fine with somebody saying that, like that. But to say dated, it doesn't make any sense to me because, you know, there's so many different kinds of music. You know, like, for example, like recently in Austin, we had the Levitation Fest, and like the big thing, the big headliner was the reunion of the 13th Floor Elevators. They haven't put out a fucking album since 19...
Formerly Psych Fest.
Austin Psych Fest.
Yeah.
And huge festival now. And they haven't put out an album since, I believe, 1970, 69 or 70. But they were, you know, I don't know, just that term bothers me.
I can hear 13th Floor Elevator songs from right around the same time, and they sound fresh to me now.
That means just don't like this. I don't like most of it either. Don't get me wrong.
Fair.
It's just...
Let me offer a semi, not really a counterpoint, but a little bit of something else, which is to say that my problem with some of the Who tracks on this record and else and otherwise... is that even among some of the ones that I actually like better than others, they start someplace interesting, and it looks like they're going to keep going someplace interesting, and then they take a left or a right turn, and they don't stay interesting.
They're really busy.
Well, some of them are really busy, but yeah, it's for a variety of reasons. But for whatever reason, I thought that this track started like it was going to take you to an interesting place, and I still really love the sort of opening riff of that track, but
I think we're looking at this from our eyes, and I think that this is extremely representative of the music of the time, and I think that, you know, I mean, maybe that's dated, I don't know, but
potato potato. Like,
no. I think Mark's got a really good point. I mean, I read a quote a long time ago, somebody talking about Jimi Hendrix, and the person was saying like, and this is coming from like, you know, 15-year-old me, where, you know, like people in heavy metal bands that could play as fast as they could play that was the most important thing to me. And this person was Kirk Hammett from Metallica, was talking about Jimi Hendrix. And he's like, look, I can go and play every note that he played in the same way that he played them. That's not what matters. What matters is why. Where did that come from?
Right.
And that's the thing that I think we have to go back to. Like, regardless of whether or not, I mean, the reason I say he has a good point is that, like, I don't know about you, Mark. You haven't really voiced your opinion on the Who yet, but I don't think the three of us are going to go out and buy a Who album in the next year. I mean,
I don't care remember which. Oh, Kevin brought it up. He bought a Who's Greatest Hits. I would own that. I would own a Who's Greatest Hits.
This is this is, in my opinion, the best Who stuff that
I wrote down a few Who songs that I like. Magic Bus, My Generation, Happy Jack, and I Can't Explain. Love those songs. Every one of them unequivocally.
Why?
I don't like any of those songs.
Well, and I would say that...
No, Happy Jack's all right.
Perhaps the reason that you get something out of them is that they have a first, second, and third act. Like, I feel like some of these songs
that makes
don't...
Sense.
There's not... They lose the narrative in the middle. I don't necessarily know if that's of its time.
Those
I think
are,
it's of that band.
But those songs are less bombastic.
That's true.
Like that he's talking about. And you start to see the bombast maybe start to... gestate on this album. And
at some point, they were in Guinness Book of World Records for being the world's loudest rock band, which I don't know if that's necessarily a thing to brag about. Like,
that thing
again,
that you heard
not
is
the
best
rock band.
My Bloody Valentine is laughing somewhere.
Well, no. But I mean,
this was like the late 70s.
Sorry, go ahead.
But go back and think about what you're saying. Like, it now doesn't matter at all. Like, now, like, who cares? But at the time, these are like boundaries that they're. These are I'm being devil's advocate here because I think that it's very important that we go back and if we listen to music from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, before now, that we recognize that some people are groundbreakers for whatever reason, even though that stuff doesn't necessarily float our boats.
I guess what bothers me is that they're in the conversation with, like, all-time greats.
No, that bothers me, too.
And I'm like, you know, like, if they were, like, you know, had that, half the success that they actually did.
That's more because maybe, of who they were when they were, I think.
That makes sense.
Than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, there are a lot of people that love this. Like, I can't, again, reiterate this enough. I can't stand most of this band's catalog. However, I feel that they need to be, like, there is something that's really cool when you see the old video of them on stage and you know, Pete Townsend doing the windmill and smashing guitars and knowing that's the first time that that happened. That's a cool thing. Put it in perspective. Like, what the fuck is this guy doing in 1966?
No, and that was pretty groundbreaking.
There's a lot that's groundbreaking. I don't want to listen to it, but it needs to be appreciated, in my opinion.
That also did have a negative effect on
guitars.
Well, on certainly general, his guitars, but a band I was working with in particular, I don't know why you'd never want to talk about like anything you've ever done in music, but I was working with a band and the dude would like the guitar player would never fucking move on stage and I was like, why don't you ever fucking move on stage? And he says, well, I don't want to be 60 years old and having to like windmill like Pete Townsend, and like,
well, that's
fair enough.
No, it's not fair enough. That's just a young, dumb thing to say.
You know, it's like get there. Like, get to the big stage and then decide what you don't want to do anymore. Like,
yeah, you don't have to keep that forever.
Yeah. Anyway, Mark?
I mean, well, what I was going to say from what I've read about Lambert and Stamp, who came in and basically started managing this band and knew nothing about music, but they knew enough about how to make a scene. You know, a lot of that stuff, like the windmill and the exploding drum sets and all of this, it was all orchestrated, you know. That was all part of the plan for this band. And I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean, you're yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, I mean, again, if for no other reason, those images are iconic. I mean, like, you know, like the image of, not to equate these in any way, but you know, even if, you know, Marilyn Monroe, even if she weren't that as beautiful as she were, like, you know, the image of her in the 7-year itch, like standing on the grate, pushing down her skirt, like people still buy tons of those posters. It's iconic.
That would be a lot less iconic if she wasn't hot.
Okay. Well, you're right. All right. All right. Well,
honest.
I mean, I'm, yeah. Okay. That's not what, I guess that's not what I meant, but you understand what I'm saying.
Like Natalie, right? From different, or from, what's that?
I don't know when I have this conversation.
No,
yeah. But okay. Right. I mean, I guess you're right.
There's
but
no Kevin Smith standing on a grade.
Just there's something.
Thank God.
There's something. Jesus Christ. Yeah. If it were, yeah.
Street cred.
Kevin
literally.
From the Wonder Years. Like,
yeah.
Well, this is all interesting and I'm glad to hear these comments. I mean, The songs that I went through and I picked personally that I wanted to listen to today were the ones that sounded least what you would expect to hear from The Who.
And there's a number of those on this record.
There are a number of those on this record. And I mean, I'm not saying that they're amazing songs, that they're fantastic, but they definitely stuck out to me. One in particular, and I don't want us to go the entire time here without recognizing I Can See for Miles. I think it's a great song. There's a reason that it
That's a really good song.
Got and into
I honestly didn't even know it was The Who till I listened to this record. I'm like, oh yeah, I know
that
song.
Right?
Yeah.
But I don't want to listen to that one because I think everybody knows that one. And
we know where it's going. The guy can see a long way. We get it.
That's right.
That's one of the songs for me personally it's so weird that you say that. That set up, like, it's got all of the things that I hate the most about The Who in one song. I can't stand that song. It's my least favorite song on this record.
And there are a couple of other songs on this record that sound very similar to that, I think.
Where would you, just out of curiosity, Shane, where would you stand with, like, a back-to-back playing of I Can See for Miles and then the 500 Miles song by the Proclaimers?
So, fair enough. I would much rather hear I can see for miles, then I would walk. Did you ever see that thing that came out a couple of years ago?
You're like, oh, yeah? You would walk? Please walk 500 miles.
Well, so where somebody, no. Somebody had like a map of Scotland, and they show like all the places in Scotland where if you started there and you walked 500 miles, where you would end up. Like, and it was all in the ocean.
Serves them right.
Well, what are you going to play?
I'd like us to listen to Glittering Girl.
Oh, let's
do
it.
That's not a bad song.
Okay.
She wasn't a fool, that glittering girl. She followed the rules, that shivering pearl. Said the rules mama breaches will die when they break. The things mama teaches, you just gotta shake. But she wasn't a fool.
Glittering Girl, and we've had some discussions. I mean, this came out on Spotify. It's on the remastered edition, and maybe it didn't come out with the original LP, but a very progressive sounding song. Typical of the time. It's not a fantastic song by any means. I don't think that it.
Well, I kept hearing components of it that I really liked, and they don't necessarily mash together. Like, you know, like the
there's like
riff
some
is
birds.
Great.
There's like some 12-string,
yeah, birds,
Rickenbacker,
yeah.
Like things that, yeah, that I really like in context of like really well-written songs. And this one's okay.
It just never realizes itself, I think.
Yeah, I didn't listen to the song earlier. I think, but I mean, from what we listened to in the break here, I mean, it sounds like a good middle of the road. 60s, late 60s pop song.
Well,
with 12-string guitar.
We talked a little bit about this when we did the Kinks record, and I think that to a certain degree, this isn't always true, but to a certain degree, some of these big 60s records sound like rock and roll on training wheels. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're just sort of not, you know, to Mark's point, like, not fully realized. There are components that are, to Ryan's point, there are components that are really interesting, and you think. Because, and maybe it's the fact that we have, you know, 40, 50 years of intervening rock history. Maybe it's not.
Saying that's a really good point. I've never actually thought of it that way. I think we've talked about this before. You know, prior to 1963, 64, you pretty much had songwriters and you had
guys
performers.
In suits showing up with a briefcase,
yeah,
like going to an office building to write songs other people to perform.
I mean, you saw it in the blues where you had guys actually composing their own songs, but in pop music you really didn't see that. And the Beatles came and just completely decimated the old style, and they firmly established the idea that if you don't write your own songs, you're not worth shit. And that coincided with this whole experimental thing that was going on in the 60s. If you go back and look at a lot of like film. Of experimental film from the 60s, it's laughable now. But again, you have to put yourself in the driver's seat of, you know, people had never seen, you know, with the you know, colored gels around and the tilted
like
camera and
Andy Warhols or your like second.
Well, no, that gets even weirder. Just a lot of the like the Batman effects and stuff like that. But I think a lot of that was trying to do something, trying to be original. Just for originality's sake. However, that's a good point that you make, Kevin, in that they sound sort of half-baked because you're, on one hand, no one had really done that before what the Beatles were. And even, you know, at this point, there are people like the Rolling Stones were writing great. The Kinks were writing magnificent, solid songs. But there were a lot of people that were writing, you know, one or two great singles, but not really putting all of their effort into writing an entire album.
Right.
Because again, also we're still looking at the time where singles mattered way more than albums, which is another reason why this album is interesting as a concept album. It's really groundbreaking.
I love the idea of this record. I don't love this record.
I really like this record, and that surprised me. But
I mostly think that it's really groundbreaking by virtue of the fact that Roger Daltrey sat in some beans.
Didn't he like
get an infection or something?
Did he?
Yeah, he got pneumonia. Hey, can I say, I just have to say one thing.
Did he get the bean pneumonia?
He wasn't even supposed to be in the beans.
Yeah,
well, John Entwistle was supposed
Kevin,
to be in the beans.
You know that that's the magical fruit. I think you may have
farted. Oh, I've heard about that.
We've heard that.
The more you eat.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, what is...
The more you eat. You want some fruit?
It's an old wives.
The more you eat,
do you want some fruit?
Oh, right.
The more you eat.
Oh,
no, but he actually did get some sort of infection from it.
I think he got pneumonia or something like that. So I have to...
He got the bean sickness.
He got the bean sick.
Yeah,
yeah. We're all very familiar with the bean sick. Yeah. It's quite common in mid-century Britain. Yeah. Bean sick.
That's like having that sugar. You know, when you get diabetes.
Oh right,
you got that sugar.
Forgot about that.
I am lost.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that.
Remiss.
I would be remiss if I did not mention that my good friend Lars Goransson, who's produced a few records of mine, I've spent a lot of time with, drinking lots of beverages in his abodes over the years, and he has this huge framed poster of the cover of this album, and we've always kind of had this detente about The Who, where he wants to tell me things when we're getting drunk, and I don't want to hear them because I don't like them.
You have like a DMZ where you can like safely talk about
right.
them?
Right. I almost asked him to come in and do this show, but I was like, he's a very opinionated man. But he would tell me stories of the poster because it's the, you know, the
I love the artwork on this record, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, I do too.
And apparently like the original artwork like was super ornate. And I'm just talking about the stuff that I saw on Spotify.
Well, there was there was an alternate version that was the psychedelic butterfly that basically got vetoed, didn't release.
Well, the one that they settled on, it's pretty
good
stuff.
It came with like a fold-out poster or something, like the first 1,000 copies or something. And so
the
it's
first
super
500 stereo and the first 500 mono got the butterfly poster as a special insert.
Well, the reason I brought that up about I've been recording albums with this guy for a long, long time, and as I'm cutting tracks, I'm looking up at this poster, and sometimes I would come out and we would have cocktails, and he would just regale me of stories of The Who, and often I would think, like, you weren't there. How do you know all this stuff about The Who?
He can regale you with stories about the Cardigans, can't he?
Yeah, well, he was there, but he's got lots of, it turns out there's a thing that's called reading.
Reading.
What you reading for?
Reading and the apostrophes. That's going to be the name of my
next. You guys should seriously check this shit out. Okay, we're going to do a few minutes with?
We are going to do a few minutes with. We're going to pop ahead about 20 years or so, and we're going to put ourselves under a little bit of pressure for this one. Welcome to the Producer Mark Takeover Hijack Show, whatever you want to call it, version of A Few Minutes With. And guys, this week we're going to be watching an old favorite of mine back when I used to listen to my music on my little yellow Walkman, my Sony Walkman with my headphones.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of Phil Collins and there was a lot of Billy Joel, and we're going to listen to some Billy Joel tonight.
Well, I gotta say, between the two, I'll fall down on Sir William Joel.
Okay, all right. Well,
between those two,
I've bounced back and forth through the years.
That's a Sophie's choice, if I've ever heard, because I'm not going to go up for bat for either of those guys.
but yeah, this song was one of my favorites back when it came out. This is Billy Joel's "Pressure," and
what's it about?
It's about. It's about coffee.
It's about barometric pressure.
That's good, yeah. So really there's a cool front coming through.
That's the thing about the 80s. Like popular culture worked best when you inserted a message. Like, you know, a very special episode of Different Strokes with barometric pressure. Well, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You have to learn to pace yourself. Pressure. You're just like everybody else. Pressure. You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal with pressure.
Well, that was interesting. There's a couple of things that I want to say before we get into this. When you said earlier, pressure, I immediately thought Queen, Billy Joel. Not Queen Billy Joel, Queen David Bowie.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Yeah. So I don't remember this song at all.
I remember this video. This is early MTV.
I don't remember the video. I don't remember the song. I've never heard any of it. But I will say just a couple of things real quick. Number one, in the beginning of the video, he's sitting in front of a screen. It's got kind of a weak nod to
Clockwork Orange.
Clockwork Orange.
Or 1984.
Yeah.
1984, yeah. too. But yeah. There were all these things just flashing in front, you know, like in Malcolm McDowell, like when they're showing this. But all of that stuff are events, somewhat stressful events of the 20th century, and some are not. And that if we go back and watch that, we'll see that that's a direct. This is basically We Didn't Start the Fire, Part One.
Well, the thing with Billy Joel is he writes really catchy songs that are overly obvious, and like kind of like they get stale after like the third listen or something. Like I remember watching this as a kid, and like I thought this was a really interesting video, but I was like 8.
Well, but okay. So this is what I'm saying. Like if you go back, I mean, alluding to or not alluding to, but completely agreeing with what you just said, if you go back and listen to We Didn't Start the Fire, where basically the song is just a litany of things that have happened.
Well, it's just watered down.
No, that's all he is. Well, he's just saying.
What he's watching in this video, in Pressure, is these are like these text blurbs flash up like family, mother,
I know, but
father.
It also says Einstein.
Yeah.
I mean, and then there are like famous things that happened in the 20th century. All I'm saying is that We Didn't Start the Fire, agreeing with what you just said, that song is just basically a song about stating things that did happen. And
but
this,
it wasn't our
this,
fault.
This is a much more interesting song.
Isn't that ironic,
song.
Shane?
Don't you think?
Yeah, I do. I really do think.
I figured you might. And so then you have this, you know, it's a guy that I think this album came on this is early 80s. I think it came on the heels of a lot of very successful records. And he was known as a piano man. So they pull all the piano out of this one. And there's like this sort of box sounding.
Well, you know, it was all going in the synthesizer realm.
Yeah, it's built around
this. Right. I had never thought about that. The actual composition of the music was very kind of that. The strings and that Bach.
It sounds like Bach. It's like this keyboard sample thing, but no piano in it. And also he's really known for these kind of languid things. If I were to guess, I don't know this, but I know that I've never heard of the album The Nylon Curtain. But I know that I've heard of several other Billy Joel
Glass
albums.
Houses, I think, was the one that immediately preceded this. And I think that he had like a huge like motorcycle accident and almost died. And this was like his kind of comeback record from the brink.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, and that's an interesting. I'd love to read more into that. I guess what I'm saying, as far as is this, you saw a lot of people in the early '80s not understanding how to catch up with their success from the '70s because the world had changed. The music changed so radically.
This happens all the time. Like the Rolling Stones put out "Miss You," which is like a bad
disco
song.
Yeah, but that was in the 80s.
That was in the 70s.
Oh, no, you know what I'm thinking? Late 70s. I'm thinking Waiting on a Friend, and that's the interesting thing about...
But that was 1980, so it's like...
Waiting on a Friend was actually 1981.
Went back to their classic stuff, and they realized we don't have to keep up with the time, so to speak. And that, I think the same thing happened with Billy Joel. The album that after this was Uptown Girl, which was... positive hit the biggest hit of his career, you know, with the going
well,
back to
add,
the 50s.
Add Christy Brinkley to anything, and
well, but there
were probably
more hits than that hit.
To me, he writes catchy songs that get really stale really quick, and
It's just a, they're just schmaltzy. They're, it's all schmaltz.
They're really obvious.
Let's recap. Basically, I had Peter Gabriel, I had Phil Collins, and then I had Billy Joel. So
those were your go to guys on your Walkman. Yeah.
Chuck,
I find Billy Joel to be better than Phil Collins, but only marginally.
No, but you know what? Phil Collins and Peter Gabriel both, like, I don't like any of those three guys, but every so often they come out with some fucking home runs. There are some...
The drum solo from In the Air Tonight?
No. But, yeah.
And with that, let's head back into our main event. Let's talk.
Can you play the drum solo from In the Air Tonight to get us out of this, back into the body of the show?
Totally do that.
Do it. I also wanted to share a little bit of the BBC take on this record because I think it's prescient for a couple of reasons. The first is, and this I actually added some clarity for me. And the guy, Sid Smith, who wrote this record review, said, whatever the arty origins of their auto-destruction stage act may have been, the resulting column inches from those exploding drum kits and wrecked amplifiers demonstrated that The Who were one of the most media-savvy bands around. Their grasp of the importance of image comes as no particular surprise, given that mod culture's attention to personal grooming and having the correct look at all times. Pete Townsend once said that the idea of interspersing... This is what I thought was important. Pete Townsend once said that the idea of interspersing the tracks of The Who sellout with radio jingles came from a desire to disguise what he felt was a weak collection of songs. Thus, the iconic cover and the audio adverts conspired to become a satirical swipe at rampant consumerism, hey presto, a concept album of sorts, well, almost. And the other thing that I didn't realize was that this is the precursor to Tommy. And so that is there are a couple of nods to that coming up next.
Can I just interject for a second? I want to email that guy a high five. Because that's exactly what I think of this record.
Yeah, it's spot on. And I thought it was so interesting that Townsend was so against the idea of the concept album, and these were all just, how do I tie together a bunch of songs?
That's what they're known for, is like concept records.
Well, because they started...
So it was this and what, Tommy and Quadrophenia are all like...
Well, no, but Tommy and Quadrophenia were rock operas.
What's the difference? I mean, really? I mean, I guess people act in those things too.
No, but I mean, granted, I get what you're saying, but I mean there's a linear narrative throughout. Right, that's a concept album, but I mean the idea is eventually I think that both of those were meant to and did at some point to incredibly mixed reviews and in different permutations have. Actors involved.
I mean, this album was essentially an accidental concept album. He was trying to tie together a bunch of songs that had nothing in common.
Yeah, they don't have
using anything. Commercial sellout type of jingles, and bingo, you got a concept album.
Can I just say one? And this is the last thing I want. Like when you're saying this, and the only reason that I'm interjecting is because like you guys were on board with the quote that Kevin just said, and not to disagree with the man that wrote the songs. Because I don't want to do, and heaven knows I don't want to do that, but I don't like the songs that he wrote that he thinks are great, and there are some beautiful lower key songs on this record that not minor key, but you know they're not as bombastic and they're more introverted.
They're off formula.
The introverted, the way that some of these songs are really introverted sets off the concept of it being the Who sellout with the commercial jingles and stuff. And I feel like that this works together in tandem. It just worked for me. At the end of the day, it's all, the whole album didn't work for me.
Did you look at like the main critics take on this? Cause it's like uniformly, they love it. And man, I don't know.
But you don't like the band, and I mean, again, I don't like the band, and that's why the first note that I have on here was,
feel like I've got pretty good taste, and like,
well, it doesn't matter if you have good. It's again, it, like we've had this conversation for years and years and years. There's subjectivity and
of course
response to music. I don't like this band, but there are songs on this record that just killed me. I've been listening to for the last couple of days. I was blown away. You know why though? You know why though?
They my new nickname though.
You know why though?
Do tell.
They sound
do.
Sort of like the mid '60s Kinks stuff that I like, and some of the Nuggets.
The Kinks are so much better.
No, they are. No. Don't get me wrong. I'm not equating the two. I'm just saying that there's a cleverness in some of these. Like the second song, what was it? I can't remember what. I don't have it written down. But
Marianne.
Yeah,
Marianne
with
the
shaky hands. Right. That song is. It's clever, and it's beautiful. And in fact, the third, the Odorono song, is really funny.
I think that's one of the ones I got sued for.
It is.
Yeah. Well, it's a
and it is funny.
It's funny
like, lyrically. It's kind of hilarious.
I mean, it's hilarious. But the difference between that and then you go into you know, other songs that just seem like the Tattoo song that just seems like it's just a novelty song. That Odorono song is actually a beautiful song. It has like that Who triumphant thing that I don't like, and with the bombastic drums and stuff like that. But I mean,
Shane looks like Joe Cocker right now.
I know. I'm just gesticulating wild. I'm having a fit. Anyway,
fugue state.
I don't know that I will listen to much of this album in the future, but I definitely.
Well, I'm glad we did. Like, I feel like it's a thing that you probably should know if you're like a music person.
Well, I feel like you know, and I, you know, it's so stupid that you and I are like, I'm having this sort of like glare at each other kind of podcast here, because we're pretty much on the same lines with this band.
You like it more. I think you like this record.
Oh no, I definitely like this record a lot more than you do. But I feel like I know you a lot, and I feel like there are certain. If I put like four songs on a playlist and just sent those four songs to you without the detritus of, and you just said we talked.
No, about, I think you're right.
We talked about this in the break that you didn't realize that the version that you listened to were a lot of B-sides and stuff that was added on to it. You didn't just listen to the original tracks of the record, like the A-side and the B-side. And you admitted, you're like, well, you were thinking, why won't it end?
Spotify thing. It was, no, I was like, I was just waiting for it to end, and it felt interminable.
Sure, and I feel like if I had been in that situation, I'm like, stop, okay, I want to do something else.
I think you both have brought up a couple of times, like the Kinks, we brought up the Beatles. There's a lot of contemporary music that we can reference here that is worth talking about, right? The Kinks you loved, Ryan.
Sure. I need to go back and listen to more of the Kinks, but I've never heard a Kinks song I didn't like. I'm sure I have, but it's a way lower percentage than Who songs I don't like.
Sure. But I think what I'm trying to get at is there this mental predisposition to hating the Who because of what you know about the Who. And here are songs that maybe are contemporary with the Kinks that came out, sound a lot like that maybe if you didn't know it was the Who, would you enjoy it more?
You know it's the Who. That's the thing.
They have a very signature sound. It's that especially the drums.
And the harmonies. Moon, the harmonies sound
Keith Moon,
very...
Yeah, and those harmonies and...
I will say that the first time that I went through this record, I thought, yeah, exactly. Like, this sounds a lot like The Who. And I was like, Frank, almost universally, not universally, but with the exception of, two or three tracks, I was like, this is just not for me. And then on the second listen, I started to warm up to it a little bit more than I had anticipated.
I do think it grows on you a little
bit. It did. Yeah, it did.
To the point where I gave myself a little test. I was like, all right, if I were stranded on a desert island and this is the only record I had to listen to.
Oh, my God.
Like, how would I deal with it? And I was like,
where does electricity come from? Like, why do I have a record player?
Don't get existential on me.
Okay, sorry.
I'm not sure if I'm using that word correctly. But anyway, I was like, well, you know, there are probably some things that I could warm up to on it. And, you know, I don't outright hate the thing.
It's
and I and I appreciate it more as an idea more than an actual execution.
They're like annoying omnipresent neighbors.
Is that going to be your punk band?
Yes. We're the annoying omnipresent neighbors.
I like how that I talk over you and that we're both like mimicking each other. Like it's like that Saturday Night Live thing where Kristen Wiig and Fred Armisen, like, never mind. Yes. So
did something funny.
Yeah. Hey, remember that time? Hey, let me tell you, my friend told me this joke. Well, it wasn't a joke. It was like a real story about something that happened in his life. It was real funny. Now, he wasn't living there. He was living in bear with me.
Down by old Johnson's farm.
All right, we're segueing you out of here.
No. Well, the last thing I want to say about this, I definitely like this album more than – and I don't love this album, but I love – by any stretch of the imagination, but I love some of the songs on this album in a way that I can't stand that won't get fooled again, that shit. I can't stand it.
I have a soft spot for Eminence Front, I will say.
For what?
Eminence Front. Some of that late 70s, early 80s.
No, that was a 90s reunion of that band.
A few of their songs are...
No, Eminence Front.
It's a put on.
Basically, what you're saying right now is... gibberish to me. I have no idea.
It's an early 80s classic rock staple.
It is it doesn't sound
like
necessarily.
Who Are You?
No. Otters,
it was a year or two after that.
It was longer than that.
So
it was after
Keith
Moon
dies.
Anyway, yes, it was after Keith Moon died.
So, but my closing point is this. Like, as much as I can say, or as much as I've said, how much I enjoyed this in relation to prior or subsequent Who albums that I've heard, I still have the need to justify it in relation to the Beatles, the Stones, the Kinks, the Zombies.
The Trugs.
I know about the Trugs, they were
from Georgia.
But the Trugs had a couple of tracks, and
didn't the Trugs do like Wild Thing?
Wild Thing and Love Is All Around are their two biggest.
All right. I don't know how you know that, but
they're from Athens, Georgia. That's how I.
Oh, because you're a big R.E.M. fan. But so my point is, I'm still justifying the Who as much as I like this album in relation to the rest of their records. I'm still justifying it, and that's how much I like it. Like, I don't love it.
I'd like for you to pick the last cut that we're going to listen to.
Did I think that really pretty song, like Maria with the Shaky Hands? Is that what it's called?
Maria with the I hope that's what it's called.
Marianne with the Shaky Hands.
Maria with the Shaky Hands.
She's got the DTs.
Maria needs to lie down for a little bit.
I dance for Jean, I dance for Cindy, and then I suddenly see Marianne with the shaky hair, but they come to a man with a shaky hair. Mary is so pretty, the prettiest in the land. Lights come from every city, just to shake her shaky hands. Linda can cook.
I like the song. And you're right, Mark, you were saying this during the listening of the song, that it pretty much has no Keith Moon in it, and I think that's maybe... why there's this sort of like folksy almost Crosby, Stills, and Nash thing, and I don't like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, but there's something that kind of, because they're doing it, makes it more interesting to me. I don't know if that makes
because
any sense.
Because the Who's doing it,
yeah,
makes it more interesting,
yeah, because you don't expect it.
So my question is really about the commercials. Do you guys think that they're cheesy or super cheesy or super 60 British cheesy?
I think they're super 60s British cheeky.
Oh, cheeky.
Yeah, I agree with Ryan.
Yeah. No, I thought, like, if anything sounded like a crazy time capsule, like, that was the stuff.
And there are some of these commercials that they didn't actually write or record. They were just appropriated.
Yeah, a little bit of precursor to the Beasties.
Like, but then there were others that were specifically written and performed for the album.
Well, and during that time, as I recall from reading up on this, like the BBC wasn't really playing music, and so most of the music that, like the rock music that people were coming across at this time, were either coming out of like it was like Radio Luxembourg or something, and pirate radio.
So radio this was London. Not long. The album came out not long after the British government passed a law basically outlawing the pirate radio.
But the pirate radio was, I mean, Radio London was literally, they were off the shores, like, on boats.
Right, and so what this law basically said was that you could not broadcast from offshore like that.
It could not be a maritime broadcast.
Yeah. Right. So this was, I think that they started the concept of the album before all of that happened, but it ended up kind of being almost a protest to the fact that the British government had said, no, you can't come out and broadcast from a pirate radio ship offshore.
It's interesting.
Fucking laws.
Well, and like you don't see a lot of rock bands bringing up brand names in their on their records. And in fact, like going back to the Kinks, the original version of Lola said Coca-Cola, and they had to change it.
That's right.
Apparently, Coca-Cola didn't want to be in a song about sleeping with a transsexual.
Yeah. Squares. Weird.
Boy, we are living in a different age.
We are in a different age.
Yeah.
Mark, thank you for bringing this up.
Certainly.
I thoroughly enjoyed listening to this. And even if I hadn't liked it, it was just something, I think, like, as opposed to a lot of times you'll listen to a record and you'll listen to it once or twice, and you'll think, oh, with subsequent listens, I'll like this more. I don't think I will. I think on subsequent listens, I'll like this less. But for a few shining minutes there in my mind, I kind of got the Who a little bit. And for that, I thank you.
I would completely agree, and I appreciate that.
I'm glad that I know it.
I would be remiss, you know, not to go an entire week without bringing up Meatloaf. But it was my greatest fear not to repeat myself on that.
Oh no! I wish you had. You always think that.
Actually, I thought about this a little bit, and this is significantly better than Bat Out of Hell, but it's also theatrical.
True. Yes.
Well,
true.
But here's the thing
and
about
Bat
Out of Hell. We've gotten more fucking mileage out of the goddamn Bat Out of Hell record than
he probably did us a great service.
He did it. I think that's.
I'll never listen to it again. But now I know.
All right, well, I appreciate that, guys, and, you know, it's hopefully I won't have to wait a whole nother year.
What's
to
next?
Be able to
hijack you have a new song for
again.
Us, don't you?
But I do have another one more song for you tonight, so why don't we roll right into that. Here is A Current Affair.
This moment changes everything. The course of blood within your veins. A stranger's form, your skeleton. See the bones glow as they break free.
Mark, all of the goodwill that you've built up with me tonight was decimated by, not by that video, which is one of the coolest videos I've ever
seen. Video looks good.
Yeah, man,
but,
what
but
up?
Basically that, and I'm saying this with air quotes, song, that song was, it actually makes sense. I can draw a linear point A to point B between the Who sellout and that song, because that song wasn't created to be listened to by people in enjoying that song. That song was created as a background to Microsoft rolling out their new Windows.
It was like an angular art rock piece.
No.
It was really Laurie Anderson.
No, it's completely created in the background for this to be the background of like Apple rolling out their new product line. The only thing it says, this changes everything, and it's got this kind of like non-offensive, quasi-industrial electronic thing in the background, and then it just repeats, you know, this changes everything, this changes everything. It's created purely to roll out Windows 10 or Apple Watch or whatever.
So the track is Sun Lux, and it's Change is Everything. And I think you're right. I think that the song itself...
It's written on purpose to sell product.
I think that a lot of Sun Lux songs are written as such. I think that they're very kind of catchphrase, kind of...
For the licensing purposes.
How can we commercialize this? And
I've never heard of this person or act before, but...
Who is it?
Sun Lux.
It was a cool video. I mean, like, that's undeniable.
That video is cool shit.
I picked it because of the creative agency that did the video, actually. I actually saw the two of the brothers that started this agency called The Maid Company. M-A-D-E, not M-A-I-D.
I actually was going to ask you that.
Yeah, well, there you go.
But did I just say I was going to ask you that?
I wasn't going to ask you that.
And I really admire these guys, and they do some really creative stuff. And the fact being that they took something extremely basic and something very old-fashioned, which is stop animation, and they took some
Pushpins.
And foam core and some string, and they animated this entire video through rotoscoping and stop animation. And I found it an amazing way to represent
the song.
Video
looks great. The video
was amazing. It's not just boring. It made me angry. It genuinely made me angry.
I love it when you get your dander up, Ben, like that.
I know. Sorry, and I do think this is another one of these things, like you were talking about the connection between this and the Who record that we listened to tonight. Like, it's impossible not to connect what we know already about product promotion and from looking at, like, it's hard to look at something through an unfiltered lens with, you know, and knowing that that's a distinct possibility.
But knowing that there's a difference, knowing there's a distinct possibility, of course, and that's what we were talking about earlier, but that song was written specifically, there's not a doubt in my mind that song was written specifically to be licensed. There are
Sure.
You can make cuts in it anywhere you want. It's just generic enough that that any sort of product line can be unveiled with that in the background. You know, this changes everything. Can't you guys imagine, like, any tech conference you go to in the world, and the speaker comes out on stage with a thing behind him on a screen, and that's the song, and it's going to be the song.
So it's like the equivalent of like the 80s montage song, you know, that's like kind of just hyped up enough for, you know, you're like watch people like working out.
I don't disagree with your assessment, Shane. I think it's entirely plausible that's, you know, that there's a revenue stream that was not foreign to the people to the guy that put this track together. But I also think, like, the devil's advocate part of me thinks, okay, well, does that mean that there is a certain subject matter or a subset of subject matter that just can't be done anymore because it's only going to be interpreted as commerce?
How do you feel about Michael Bay movies? How do you feel about Transformer?
I love big summer movies.
Okay,
but I love them. I love them specifically for the camp.
It's not. I'm not saying whether you love them or don't love them.
Bring an explosion, dude.
I'm saying is, when I say how do you feel about it, I'm saying, like, these things are here and they're here for a reason.
Sure.
We go to, if you want to go, if you don't like that stuff, or if you don't always want to see that stuff, there are alternatives.